open up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door in the night.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It is Friday. Thank God. Everybody else is off today.
Coaches, scouts, you and me.
Yeah.
Coaches and scouts, I know in the eyes of a Browns fan, they need to be here working.
And they are hard at work as they get ready to build the 2016 Cleveland Browns. Happy Friday, everybody. Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm. Zagura's on the golf course. Dino, I might have you prank call him today. I think we should call him on the course to see what's going on and where he's at on things.
Oh, I think so too. Yep. I think on day two, yes.
Yeah.
We left him alone yesterday. I think today it's
Yeah, I think he was a little upset with the rental car company and who knows, but he did tweet out pictures of him being on a golf course, so I feel like we might have to interrupt the round today.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's the glue has to interrupt the Super Bowl since he's bouncing all over the place. Hope you're doing well. Big weekend, holiday weekend for some people, Valentine's weekend, another weekend for those without a Valentine to drink heavily and just try to go through the motions. So, Willem's literally choking over here. The OBM Hot Topics for today.
Go through the motions.
Go through the motions.
Wish upon a star, whatever they do.
Yeah. Are you going hog wild for the lady for Valentine's Day?
No.
It's interesting because some people go crazy. Others don't. Others don't even acknowledge the holiday.
Go wild. I have something nice planned, but it's not going to be
just for you
excessive.
And her, or the kids involved too.
Just for her and I, and it's more. I mean, it's who it's about. I mean, my daughter walked up to me this morning and sang to me her Valentine's Day song that she learned at school and gave me a Valentine. You know, hand wrote it out, so that was very touching. She did one for my wife as well, so that was cute. But it's Valentine's Day, great.
Do they have this today, the kid Valentine parties?
No school today.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, somehow a kid's got a four-day weekend.
Yes.
Because that's,
teachers have to work today?
Yeah, it's a teacher work day, which I don't really know how much work the teachers do on the teacher work day. But
I don't either.
They're there. So at least in addition to the coaches, players, you and me, they are working today.
They are. They'll enjoy Monday, though.
Yeah. So was the Valentine party yesterday?
It was. The big exchange.
When everybody goes around. Did she have to fill out,
My wife, is reluctant to be able to go into school and participate in some of their math and reading centers. And she goes in. She went in for their holiday party or their Valentine's Day party yesterday. And so I don't. They came home. My kids came home with a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Paper Valentines and stuff. Sticky hands and erasers
candy.
And pencils and candy and stuff that's just going to accumulate all over my house that I'll sneak into the trash can little by little.
I can tell you, Monica's youngest is in sixth grade. And last Sunday I was like, wait a minute, we don't have a Valentine's party. Valentine's parties are over. I don't know if she knows that. And I'm definitely not going to bring
it
up.
Is it because it was sixth grade?
Sixth grade, man. It ends in fifth, man. Everything, all the flowers
they're
and
too
candies,
mature for all that?
Well, according to the teachers and
sure.
The school administrators.
I think you just don't want to go through the hassle.
I had to, so the one year Monica was like, hey, would you want to help? And I said, yeah, I've got some extra vacation time. I'll take the day off. I'll help. If that's not the ultimate form of birth control, I don't know what is.
Someone else's kids?
Yeah.
Yeah,
believe
me.
You can't discipline them like you can your own. And it is a free-for-all.
You're
on
right.
Those
you're
days.
Right about that when you go to the school, but I will let you know and I've, my wife talks to me sternly when I do this, but when you're in my house, like when we have people over, get-togethers with other people's kids, I govern the body of kids as if they were my own. So if you're doing something that I don't see fit in my house, I let them know nicely the first time. I let them know nicely a second time. And the third time, I'm grabbing them by the ear, not the throat. the collar, their wrist, and walking them over to their mother and father and going, hey, I told little Billy, stop doing this or quit doing that, and he just not doing it. So I'll leave him to you to figure it out.
I let Monica, because Monica was the bad person on that. I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know if I could touch the kid or, you know, smack the kid or whatever. But we have good kids.
Yeah.
Most of our kids that come over, I agree.
There's just a couple that push the envelope, you know, and I'm a private person to begin with. So the kid that's like opening random doors in my house and like pulling things out of closets that aren't supposed to be opened in the first place and then pulled out, that kid, I got a problem with. Because that kid makes more work for me, you know?
Wilhelm wants to fight children.
I walk over to the parents and I have an open conversation. And I just go, hey, if my son or daughter were to ever do that at your house or you caught them doing that, I would hope you just wouldn't let that go either. Because first of all, my children should not be doing that.
Yeah.
Most likely would not be doing that. But if they did, I wouldn't want you to let it go. So I kind of put it out there that everyone, we're all in it together, so that I'm not the only one that's like laying smack down.
No, I like it. I like good form.
I just don't take stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And we didn't have to use the dump button.
Correct.
Dino, you didn't have to use the
dump
button.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I was concerned for just a moment.
It's a 10 second delay.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Woo. Trust me, that has come into play numerous times.
Yeah, it has saved us many a time.
Yeah,
so it doesn't allow you to have a quick trigger.
The problem is, like, once you dump, you can't do anything more. You can't take calls.
No,
you got to be real careful because it takes 3 or 4 minutes to amp back up to 10 seconds.
Really?
That's why I'm always in your headset going, "Do not go to another call, man. Whatever you do, because
you must wait."
Gotcha. I learned something today.
Yeah.
You learn how you're going to try to screw up my Apple cart the next time that happens.
I just want to see you get all flustered and try to catch the dump button with like greasy fingers or something.
I do not eat normally when the show is on.
Nor do I.
You know, Riz is having an all-you-can-eat buffet in there. And Gerard eats for 4 hours from
Free Food Fridays.
9:01 to 12:59. Today's OBM Hot Topic. So Valentine's Day is Sunday. How big do you go on Valentine's Day for your loved one? Do you acknowledge it? Do you not? What are you getting them? If you're going out to eat, where's the go-to spot? You got plenty of options here. It's like Mecca of food in Cleveland. Where are you taking the lady? And also, Joe Thomas, who we will hear from at 1:30 today in Soundbites last night at the Home and Garden Show. He said Browns fans should be excited for the future with the team getting Hugh Jackson and the team having the number 2 pick in the draft. What's your biggest reason for optimism as we head into the 2016 season? We're less than 2 weeks away from the start of the NFL Combine. That's going to be here in 12 days, and Browns Daily will be live from the Combine Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Right after that, 2 weeks later, we start free agency. And then
how long after that is the draft?
Exactly. 5 weeks, 6 weeks. We are right into the draft. It is going to come fast and few. And in between there, you've got that mandatory. I don't think what fans realize is, I guess one of the positives of getting a new coaching staff.
That bonus practice days.
You get a whole new veteran weekend mandatory mini camp, which will be like the first week in April, which I'm sure the players don't necessarily
Congratulations,
like.
You stink. We're going to give you more work.
I don't think the players like that, but for the coaches, it gives them a chance, and it gives us a chance to take a look at this, what this team might look like in 2016.
Which at that point is going to be very interesting.
Yeah. I don't even know. Other than Josh McCown, Davis will be here.
He's under contract. Connor Shaw will be here. Johnny Manziel is under contract.
Right now, yeah.
But March 9th is D-Day for him. And
that
could also be for other
guys.
Correct. And it just seems, hearing Joe Thomas's comments about Johnny Manziel, that Joe understands wholeheartedly where this franchise is coming from in regards to Johnny Manziel, so much so that in his verbiage talked about his last days in Cleveland or last time in Cleveland.
Yeah, he basically said last night, sorry that it didn't work out. I'm sorry that it didn't, which would again lend further credence to the fact that come March 9th, we're gonna see something happen with this football team. Now, the other interesting date to watch is March 4th, because that's when Alex Mack has to let the Browns know what he intends on doing. If he intends on continuing to play out the contract, or if he will test the market. I got a feeling he will probably
test the last day, right?
Correct. So
I don't know. He's making what, $9 million?
I believe so.
$9 million is a lot of money for a center. And there's probably only three to five teams out there that are probably in the market for a Pro Bowl center that also have the money to spend, you know, at or around $9 million on a center.
Do you want to spend $9 million on a center if you're that other team? That's the question. If you have other holes that need to be filled.
Right.
You know, for a team like Seattle that traded their center for Jimmy Graham, maybe that makes sense. But you got a lot of guys tied up in money. And
yeah, but for us or for them, it's one player for a lot of money. It's not like you're acquiring an asset the way, can you give up Alex Mack for something in return? That's not the case that we're in. Is it $8 million? Still a lot of money. Thank you, Dino. Yeah, I don't know, but it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and you have Mitchell Schwartz, who is a free agent. Tashaun Gibson's a free agent. A number of guys.
Travis Benjamin, if
Travis
the deal's
Benjamin,
not done.
Yep, that I know that they have been working with and have made no secrets to the fact that they've been reaching out and trying to get him under contract.
I find it hard to believe that Travis Benjamin is going to leave the Cleveland Browns, because I don't necessarily believe that there's a team out there that's going to pay Travis Benjamin as a number one wide receiver. Okay, and I believe that either via the draft or with Josh Gordon's return, that Travis Benjamin at no point over the term of the future contract that he would sign here in Cleveland, that he would be regarded as a number one wide receiver. And my whole point in saying that is because it was, November during the season when we got wind of 75 to 80% chance that Travis Benjamin returns because of the talks
sure.
that were going on.
Yep.
That's for 4 months ago, you know, almost four months ago. And I just find it hard to believe that either the talk stalled because of the change in regime. A, with Sashi, you know, the firing of Ray Farmer and the hiring of Sashi Brown.
Sure.
But I wouldn't imagine that Sashi Brown would not pick up right kind of where Ray Farmer left off if there wasn't, you know, a different thought about Travis Benjamin and what he's essentially worth to the Cleveland Browns.
Well, and maybe that's where that whole new way of thinking comes into play. That Sashi Brown took over and said, I'm just not going to run in and necessarily sign a guy that maybe we were talking to. Maybe I need to step back and evaluate everybody on that roster and see maybe we need to get a coach in here first. Maybe
yeah.
the coach has to have
And maybe,
a say
you know, it was Hugh watching Travis's film, giving evaluation of Travis Benjamin in Hugh's offense. It was maybe Paul DePodesta, you know, putting together some analytical report on Travis Benjamin as a Brown and how he projects, you know, in the years ahead as a Cleveland Brown, and then Sashi as the decision maker, putting his head together, you know, putting his own little report together. And I would hope from a collaborative standpoint that that's the way that they make their decisions. There's no, this is the guy I got to have, and so that guy's going to get it because I owe you one. That's,
correct.
Those are the old days, and it never worked out in our favor.
Well, I was going to say, and that's why you ended up in the situation at the end of last year that you ended up in. With
my draft
infighting.
Pick, your draft
yeah.
pick.
I'm not going to play this guy because you took him, and I'm going to cut this guy because you liked him, and whatever the case might be, the infighting amongst the two groups, it's the one thing you can't have.
No.
And you know, one would think that everybody is so far so good.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens that first sign of adversity, how this – and where will that come, do you think? Does that come for free agency? Does that come draft?
I really hope, because as you look around the NFL, and you know, Nathan, obviously our statistics guy, you know, down in Florida golfing at the time, is able to point out a lot of the bad free agents that were signed and overpaid. And maybe you said it yesterday. You know, you got what, or maybe you said it Wednesday. It was B and C free agents making A money.
Yeah, it's the it's the Bill Polian method. C and D free agents getting paid A and B money.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the one thing that we have to avoid, because it's a detriment to your organization if they don't work out and they don't, you know, give you a return on your investment. And it seems to happen a lot to the Cleveland Browns. And even as you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars spent a lot of money in signing like 6 first day, second day, third day free agents, and were extremely active. Julius Thomas and, you know, the outside linebacker kid from Dan Scuda, whatever his name is, from the 49ers, and all these big name free agents, and they spent a ton of money. And as we pointed out yesterday, 5-11. It didn't turn over as quickly as they would have
expected. Look at the Dolphins getting Ndamukong Suh.
It made them worse.
Yeah. It made them a lot worse.
It made them worse.
They got their coach fired.
And their interim coach fired.
Yeah.
Not retained, per se.
And that's why I think that first sign of adversity is not going to come during free agency, because I feel like the Browns have already told us up front, we're not going to build this team through free agency. We're going to add players in free agency that make sense financially, that are maybe younger. They're not necessarily the veterans in the National Football League.
And I don't think they're necessarily going to be these overly, like, it's not going to be, star free agents don't hit the market. So,
exactly.
He would have to come here as a developing player and become a star in a Browns uniform. You're not going to get a star player off of a team, because they're going to be resigned by the team for that matter. And then B, if the Cleveland Browns, I don't think are ever, maybe as a franchise, are ever the personality of a team, because they haven't won consistently enough to be attractive to a star player to want to play there and sign for a lot of money and play there for 5 years and play out that big contract. It's just not how we do business.
No, and that's not a bad thing. And I think that's why they'll be in sync. You know, will it come down to who stays on the roster and who doesn't? And as that being the first sign of adversity, maybe for this coaching staff and front office, or will it come at the draft at that number two draft slot?
I think if I were the coaches, and the report that I'd want to give Sashi Brown and that crew of individuals is, and I know these coaches have been watching a ton of Browns tape. You listen to Hugh Jackson be introduced, and it was like, I gotta watch this team play. I gotta see who I want and who I don't.
And it hasn't just been Hugh.
Right.
You know, we walked by rooms where the entire coaching staff,
of course,
even guys are standing
those
in the back.
Those clickers are buzzing.
Yep.
You know, watching this tape, they're evaluating free agents. They're evaluating other systems that work very well. A lot of playoff team tape is being watched by these coaches. And I wouldn't be surprised, as you said, some difficult decisions. And I would hope that these coaches, because they're all brand new to the Cleveland Browns, they're, in most cases, they're all brand new to these players, that if they go, it's I can win with this guy, or he ain't good enough to play in my system. And it's got to be cut and dry, because of the number of draft picks that we have and how active we can be because of the salary cap space that we have in free agency to fill those voids right now. Because I don't expect us to go 3-13 to 10-6.
No.
It ain't going to happen. We'll go 3-13 to 6-10 to 7-9.
But you have to improve.
You have to improve.
You can't go 3-13 or 4-12
no,
again.
No, no. One game is not good. One game is not good enough for this turnover. One game is not good enough for this fan base. And based around the individuals that make up this, 19-coach roster, it's not good enough. And there's too many great coaches for the players to not soak in what they're preaching and applying it on the football field.
All right, we want to hear from you. 216-578-0850. Tweet at the show, @Browns_daily. If you have NFL questions, Browns questions, whatever you want to talk about today. It's kind of a free-for-all Friday. We were talking before the show. There's not really that hot button, as the consultants like to tell us, like the people in New York and those
hot
kinds
take.
Of people. Yeah. So if you got a hot take, we want to hear from you. Joe Thomas says Browns fans should be excited. What is your biggest reason for optimism? Valentine's Day, are you going big for the lady? And what's the best restaurant in the city that to go to celebrate the big day? We're already getting texts and tweets coming in. My good friend Janko, let's get this straight. 3 minutes in and Gibbs has already insulted single people, teachers, and other people's kids. Who are you going to trash next? I don't know, but we have an hour and 40 minutes to do so. It's Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, back here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm with you on this Friday.
Hello there.
That's the worst. I honestly, you know, it's one of those things in life where...
That was a great facial expression, by the way.
That's about exactly what you get when you get him in studio doing it. Yes. It's like you said, his is a little bit more...
He contorts
like
everything.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's like, it's one of those things you just, I can't look at him when he does it, but I know it's coming. So I just can't, and I don't want to take my headphones off and just, I'm going to hear it some way, shape, and form.
Sure.
He's big on it. It's one of those, I don't know, I think it'll just fade.
I don't know.
I think if I like don't play into it, he'll forget about it one day. And then you and I can never let him do it again if he forgets it once. Because he can't do it again.
Correct.
It's done. It's gone. The streak is over.
By the way, fantastic spread here in Camp Berea for a Friday. If you like carbs, I might have to jog home.
So there was chicken piccata?
Yep.
The chicken piccata, there was salmon.
Yep.
There was a couple deep
fantastic
dish
fantastic pizza.
Couple deep dish pizzas.
Yeah. Like Italian, a homemade Italian
like seasoned
place.
Italian. Yeah, exactly. And then there was a big tray of garlic bread with the cheese melted on top. And as Gibbs and I are grabbing food, I look over and there's a big, large Italian salad.
Keep in mind, we're the last ones probably to eat. The entire coaching staff
lunch,
is grazing.
Lunch ends at 1 o'clock, and so you and I grabbed at like 12:40.
Correct.
The salad didn't get touched. I'm talking like no one took half of a hard-boiled egg, a sliver of cheese, or a tomato off that
There's
thing.
Not one thing out of place.
There's not one thing out of place salad. On this salad, so everybody carved up today. Going to be a long weekend.
It was amazing. I mean, normally, you know, someone eats the salad, and the salad's very good.
I usually love the salad. I get the salad when it's made here in a big bowl.
Yep.
That was a salad from probably where they got the food from, where the pizza came from.
Yep.
And... No one was feeling. I want to put a little sprinkle of salad on top of my carbohydrate
garlic
plate.
Garlic bread, and then like putting like Parmesan cheese on top of the melted cheese on the garlic bread. Yeah, it was a fantastic day. 216-578-0850 at Browns_daily. So Joe Thomas says everybody needs to be excited for the future. What's the biggest reason you are excited for 2016, Matt Wilhelm?
I would have to, first and foremost, I would say this staff.
It's impressive.
It is impressive. I'm very excited. I'm not as excited this year as I was last year about free agency and draft, even though, you know, having the number over two overall pick and potentially being able to capture your franchise quarterback. What I'm excited for is putting blind faith in Sashi Brown and is it Andrew Berry?
Yes.
Andrew Berry, Paul DePodesta, Hugh Jackson and his track record as a head football, both as a head football coach and as an offensive mind in this league, and Jimmy Haslam, you know, taking another swing at the plate with the new regime. I'm putting blind faith in them to accumulate the talent and evaluate the talent properly and make good decisions all offseason. Although on this show, we'll talk about the good, bad, and indifferent about it. What I'm really excited for is the change in the culture that I will viably see with my own two eyes once training camp starts. Veterans participating in training camp, every practice, really fine-tuning your craft, earning your money, earning a spot on this roster, and to see, you know, coaches, and some of which I've played, you know, played for as coaches before and some that I've played against, and to know their personalities and what they expect, and Hugh Jackson to essentially play out everything he talked about in that opening press conference. You know, the toughness, the winning, all those things, you can see those things happening in practice. And I think, you know, you and I, you were at Rochester, right?
Oh, yes.
That was one thing to me, especially watching that first day of practice, that I had a feeling coming out of that. And mind you, the Bills finished at what, 8-8?
Yeah.
8-8, they're a .500 football team. And we got spanked by the Bills.
On day one.
Okay, mind you, bus trip, in a hotel, out of your element after a week of training camp, 10 days of training camp. Okay, just like playing a road game. Okay, no different. And for us to be physically dominated, and their talent level be extremely above where ours was offensively and defensively. I stood up straight and I went, "Whoa!" This is scary. They're either scary good, like gonna give the Patriots a run for their money in the AFC East, or we're scary bad. And obviously, they're not that good, and we were scary bad.
I just remember that Browns Daily. We started 20 minutes after everything ended.
Up in the press box.
On the field, up in the press box. And we all looked at each other like,
I mean, Gilbert now, that 2 day worth of practice and him getting annihilated by any Bills receiver is a non-story, because he's a non-story for the Cleveland Browns other than essentially where he was selected. It was everything else and Justin Gilbert too that was shockingly bad. We weren't able to match physicality. We weren't able to match speed. We had no playmakers. We weren't making any plays. And like I said, the Bills were without players. You know, they were without how many running backs that next the preseason game thereafter?
Yeah. No one played. Remember that Monday, their middle linebacker, I think it was, one of their linebackers tore his ACL.
Yep.
And everybody got freaked out after that and said, that's it. No one else. We went from like Monday's 2.5 hour slobber knocker to Tuesday, everybody going, well, we're just going to play touch for an hour.
Correct.
Under the lights from 6 to 7.
Yeah.
Which was a pointless practice.
Yes. So to bring everything full circle, I want to see this football team practice like football teams that I've participated with or have participated against that have an edge about them, a physicality about them, a swagger about them, and an efficiency about them. Because that's the one thing for me when it comes to training camp, to find a head coach and a team full of guys that there is a mutual understanding that if I give you maximum effort, coach, you'll reward me with the time that I need for my body to recover. So that at no point throughout training camp do I have to, you know, in practice, when you want maximum effort, I have to crank it down a little bit to protect myself so that I can stay healthy throughout training camp and participate in those preseason games and make this football team. It's pedal to the metal to know that there's that open line of communication. Like, hey, you show me, you'll get that break. You earn that break. And I think, as I've said before, the one thing, and I'm using this player, nothing against him. I'm just using him as an example. K'Wan Williams, second year in the NFL, undrafted free agent the year prior, played well in his rookie year.
Yes, he did.
A budding star as a nickel corner in the National Football League, getting days off simply for rest and not injury. That is the red flag waving like I've ever seen it. And mind you, that's only an example. It happened to everyone. You know, the Starks days. And that's,
it was a country club, man.
It was a country club. And I even really think, like, and I know Joe Thomas is Joe Thomas, and he's great, and he's you know, making history here in a Browns uniform for his position and for an offensive lineman in the 50 years of the Super Bowl and so on and so in these different eras. But when Joe Thomas and Randy Starks got days off on Wednesday, did them having a day off really help them play that much better and impact the outcome of a football game?
Is Wednesday's practice that difficult? It's installation day.
Right. It's going to be slow, screw it up,
yeah,
you know, kind of day. So
yeah, it's not.
There was just a lot of things that, and again, Joe, because he does it so well, you want to take him for granted. The last thing you want to do is have him roll an ankle. But I'm just not on board with that country club atmosphere. I want to see Hugh Jackson get a bunch of football players out here with the right mentality to buy into what he's got going on. And the best way for me to see that and understand what this team could possibly do is in training camp. So that's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, no question about it. I think that's what we all want to see. I want to see a training camp that's hard, that's physically demanding, that's tough on the guys, that isn't going to give guys days off. I don't need to see 12 guys riding a bike every day.
They earn it.
Yeah.
Earn a day off. Earn a day off. And it's not just a guy here, a guy there, because I remember when I was a young player and there would be a guy get a vet day every once in a while. I didn't look at him like, oh, he's in his ninth year, he deserves it. I'm like, man. I go, he hasn't even been practicing that hard. He hasn't been having these great practices. Why is he getting it? Simply because he's older than me? You know, you start to look.
Would you rather see they get the whole team get a day
off
instead of select guys?
I would. I definitely would. Or I would say if it was a very competitive training camp, I would say, you know, 13 to 15 guys make up a starting defense and a starting offense because of nickel and package and so on and so forth. But I would say if you did a competition the way Petten did at the end of the practice, whoever wins this competition, you know, is that starting group is going to get tomorrow's practice off. Because you can go out and have a young developmental practice, which your young players are going to get a heavy portion of reps, kind of like how they come in early before training camp. You go back to that stage.
Sure.
You catch them up. You get them a lot of live action reps, which they don't get when the starters are practicing, and everybody wins. Vets get the day off because they earned it, or that side of the ball gets the day off because they earned it, and the young players get a lot of one-on-one coaching and reps that they don't get in training camp.
Before we go to break here, let's go to Aaron in Sterling. Aaron, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hey, I'd like to know what you think about Barkevius Mingo. Should we keep him, trade him? Because I'm not really on board with him.
Thanks for the phone call, man.
For me, I believe that, you know, Ray Horton was the defense coordinator here when he was drafted.
Got something out of him.
I would say don't make a quick move on Barkevius Mingo, because I don't necessarily, and I don't know this from Ray Horton, what type of scheme he's going to create here that Barkevius Mingo can actively participate and be productive in. The one thing that I don't want out of Barkevius Mingo is to ID him as the dropper. To be a great player in this league, you have to do a few things good and maybe one thing great, and play to that strength. And I think Barkevius Mingo, he's got to show flashes of being able to get to the passer. Otherwise, every time he's in a football game, a quarterback or an offensive scheme is going to identify him as a dropper because he is no threat. So I want to see Mingo. I would love to see Mingo come in as, like, you know, 15 pounds heavier, maybe not as
fat. I feel like that's a thing we ask for every year.
I know. But, I mean, put 15 pounds on, slow down just a hint, and get more physical and be able to win a one-on-one matchup, and I think you might see Mingo in the field more.
Fair enough. We want more of your phone calls. It's an open Friday. Someone's walking away with a salad. Who was it? Is that Melon?
It is Melon.
Melon taking the salad. No one wanted it. I think Melon's taking it home. He's feeding the family tonight. 216-578-0850. Tweet at the show at Browns_daily after this timeout. We will hear from Joe Thomas and what he had to say last night at the Home and Garden Show out at the IX Center. Some very poignant comments and statements from him. More of your phone calls and your tweets as Cleveland Browns Daily rolls on a Friday on ESPN 850 WKNR.
There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging on the hook outside your door. Just an old.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right. We're back on a Friday with you till 3 o'clock. Gibbs and Wilhelm. I think at 2 o'clock we should prank, we should get Zagura. Dino, let's plan for 2 o'clock.
You know, call. Should I use like the hotline number? The contest line number,
yes,
that he doesn't know?
He won't know.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, and he'll answer.
Yeah.
That'll be perfect.
We'll get him
on the course.
We can do that.
You can call us, 216-578-0850. It's kind of an open Friday. Any questions, we welcome all of them. College football, pro football, you name it, the Browns. You can also tweet at us at Browns_daily like Nick NBG did. Should the Browns franchise Mitchell Schwartz or anyone else? Think it'll come down to that.
I don't think it's going to come down to that. And I don't necessarily believe that the Browns as a franchise want to use those tags because of the guaranteed money associated with those tags. And I would imagine if Alex Mack's making $8 million a year and...
Well, you can't franchise him.
No, I know that. I'm trying to kind of accounting the money along that line. You figure Mack's making $8 million, Thomas is probably making $9-ish or $8-ish, right? What would the average of the top five salaries in the NFL be for a right tackle? It's got to be high. Probably around that same number.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And there are some people that consider him a top five right tackle.
Right.
And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but.
If he's a top 10, even if he's a top 10 right tackle, if he's a top half of the league right tackle, I think you have to do everything you can to keep him here because there's going to be a significant drop-off unless there's another right tackle hitting free agency that you're going to sign. Because you're not going to – you don't want to put Cam Irving out there. You want to get him in the position that he's going to play here in Cleveland as soon as possible, whether that's center or one of the guard positions.
Agreed.
And I don't necessarily know that if for Hugh Jackson to run the offense that he wants to run, we have to we can sacrifice having questions along our offensive line. We need to be able to run the football in that power game. We need to be able to protect the passer. Those are two things you have to do.
Especially if you're going to take a quarterback at number two.
And, guys, just so you know, Joe Thomas is slated for 2016 to make $9.5
million. $9.5. Dino, yeah. while we're talking, can you look up the franchise tag for right tackle as well?
Yeah. Well, actually, and I think it goes for all offensive tackles. I don't know if it's right tackle specific, but I'll check on that.
That'll probably make it even higher.
Yeah. I'm pretty confident it's not just right tackle. I think it's offensive tackle, I think.
You can't pay Mitchell Schwartz more than you're paying Joe Thomas, can you?
For 1 year.
I don't think you can do that.
Well, the principle of it, you'd say no, but from a business standpoint, if it allows you to buy the same way that, you know, teams have used the franchise tag, as Nathan has said, to buy them time to get a long-term deal done and to keep that individual in a Browns uniform makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, he fits the mold of what the Browns are doing from a front office standpoint and a mindset. He's a young guy. You know, he doesn't have too many years on him. He's an above-average player.
Right.
It would make sense for them to go get him.
Now, guys, here's how it works. I just checked. It's not even offensive tackle. They break it down by offensive linemen. So they count guards, centers, and tackles here.
So the top five salaries averaged.
Last year, if you wanted to franchise an offensive lineman last year for the franchise tag, this is 2015, it was $12.9 million.
There's no way you can.
And
franchise.
With inflation.
Yeah, with
it's
inflation.
Be a little bit more.
Yeah.
13.4.
Yeah. I like Mitchell Schwartz. You can't pay him $12 million.
No.
And if you're wondering, as far as safety, if you wanted to look at it for Tayshaun Gibson, let's say.
His is what, like 9 or 10?
$9.6 million for safeties. Yep.
What about the transition tag?
The transition tag for offensive linemen, $11.09 million.
That's not going to happen.
And then safeties, you know, and again, Browns just went down this road with Alex Mack. Safeties.
Maybe that's why Alex Mack's going to. More than likely go for free agency.
Yeah, $8.2 million for safeties.
Wow.
I don't know if you can franchise anybody.
I don't think you can.
I don't think so.
I'll say the answer is no because of the amount of money that franchise tag will cost you in guaranteed money for just Mitchell Schwartz only for 1 year. B, the reason why you don't – you would have gotten a long-term deal done with Tayshaun Gibson last year coming off the season that he had. As opposed to you're not going to franchise him now because of what it's going to cost you against the cap. And you were wheeling and dealing on him last year. And he played under, you know, his, what, second round tender for $3.5 million?
Yep.
I don't think the tags are being used by the Browns.
I don't think it makes sense financially.
No, it doesn't.
I don't think you can justify
that. I will say that Mitchell Schwartz made him money. In a contract year this year, made himself money
yes,
this year.
He did.
And Tayshaun Gibson lost himself a lot of money in the way he played this year. And a lot of that had to do with no Joe Hayden and, you know, the defense being as bad as it was all year. And
the injury question.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have people that continue to question the injury bug with him. And I love him. He's one of my favorite players in the locker room. I don't make any bones about that. I think he's a solid guy. I think he's a solid player on the field. He's a stand-up guy in the locker room. He's one of those guys that's going to talk in the locker room after a loss. He's not afraid to do that, and he's not afraid to be the man and man up and admit when they could be playing better. That's clearly not an issue with him. Another guy that it's not an issue with, Joe Thomas, who was last night at the Home and Garden Show out at the IX Center. He was at the Universal Windows Direct booth. Joe Thomas, with some very pointed comments and some good ones at that. Number one, where was Hugh Jackson on Joe Thomas's wish list?
When we were going through the coaching search, he was the number one guy that I was hoping that we would hire. Didn't know what our chances would be because of the history that this franchise has had with firing coaches so quickly and going through so many different guys. But for Jimmy to be able to land Hugh, I think is a huge coup.
Clearly, this hiring, Matt, has players interested. And I mean, not just Joe Thomas and guys on the Browns, but I got a feeling there's some guys around the league that have turned their heads and gone, okay, what's going on in Cleveland that Hugh Jackson wanted to go to the Browns?
I agree. And I think that, you know, for you look at not only Hugh Jackson, but you look at the staff that he brought in here. It's a diverse group, as Nathan's pointed out, with significant, I think a majority of them have, you know, 8+ years in the National Football League at somewhere and multiple stops. That's intriguing. Why would guys want to leave other situations? Why would Kirby Wilson want to leave, you know, possibly one of the top five rushers in NFL history to come be a part of what we have going on? So Hugh's got to be, you know, talking up this situation, talking up the roles very well, and people have to be buying into his plan on where this franchise will be 2-3 years from now. And I think if he can do that to grown men who've both played and coached in this league, if he can do half of that to this locker room in year one, we'll be better off from a culture standpoint at least, and hopefully wins and losses, you know, in year one from the way we were last year.
Wow, that culture word.
It never stops.
No, because we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it since 1999. Joe Thomas as well talked about drafting a QB in the first round.
You've got hopefully the future of the franchise getting drafted in the first round, and then you've got Josh mentoring him and coaching him along the way. I can't see a better situation that the Browns could possibly be in than that.
However, hiring a coach, free agency, all that stuff doesn't mean anything if you don't get the magic player that you have to get on a pro football team.
It doesn't really matter what you do with the rest of the team if you don't have a quarterback. I mean, it's great to hire a new coach and bring in free agents and stuff, but unless you solve the quarterback piece of the puzzle, you'll be finding a new coach every 2 years.
It's a pretty pointed comment from a guy since 2007. How many coaches has he gone through? Five? Six? I mean, that's...
The proof's in the pudding.
Yeah.
And I think, and all he's speaking is from personal experience. And if you did took a consensus of this locker room with guys that have been other places, there's no one that's been through more that wants to win more than Joe Thomas. And the fact that he wants to do it here, and maybe you have the cut coming about, you know, this regime has told him that he's not going to be traded. That's got to be reassuring for Joe. And I think in some cases it simmers down Joe's comments that were probably misconstrued about him wanting to be traded if he's not essentially happy with the direction of this team.
Joe Thomas did talk about, those rumors about him, you know, with analytics favoring more of a younger player making less money. Would that make him more expendable? Joe Thomas gave this thought on, you know, GMs and making their teams better and what they should do no matter what people outside the building may or may not say.
Players are commodities, and if they feel like they've got a good value or a good opportunity to make the team better, they should get fired if they don't make that decision, because that's your job when you're in control of a football team, is do everything they can to make the team better, whether that's trade your 10-year guy or sign a guy that nobody has ever heard of, but you know he's going to make your team better.
And I think GMs struggle with that. I think coaches struggle with that at times. You know, do you trade the face of your franchise, so-called? You know, are you willing to step up and make that move? The Browns say Joe Thomas is staying. All signs point to he's not going anywhere.
Right. And I think that if I were Hugh Jackson or I were Sashi Brown, and you look at the money that you delegated to Joe Thomas and what he's done here in Cleveland, he has earned the right to make $10-plus million. And I think what it allows you to do, and why, if for a team that drafts Joey Bosa, it allows you to have that piece of young premium real estate, you know, on your defense as Joe has been at left tackle, and you build around that guy. Now, there's been mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake, which is why you can look at Joe Thompson and go, like, as Nathan would say, what value does he really have for your team? Because he doesn't win or lose you football games.
Sure.
But I think if you take the mentality of, okay, Joe Thomas being your left tackle is written in Sharpie, okay? Let's use him, you know, a pencil and pencil in the pieces next to him and eventually graduate them to pen and then eventually put
Sharpie.
Them, you know, and then you get me a Jared Goff or Paxton Lynch or Carson Wentz is going to be Sharpie at quarterback, okay? You got Crowell, but you got Duke Johnson probably going to be in Sharpie, you know, at running back, at least for his rookie deal, right? Then if you're going to sign Benjamin to a long-term deal, he's a Sharpie two or three wide receiver. Gary Barnage is a Sharpie on this football team. And it's like, so it's like the more concrete pieces that you can, it's like shuffle, every team shuffles, you know, a starter in, a starter out, two starters in, two starters out, that bottom 15% of their roster to help their special teams, a development guy, you promote a guy from the practice squad, but the great teams have 7 of 11 guys in Sharpie. And they're rotating those four. They're constantly trying to get better at those positions, get more talented, get faster, get more physical, and get younger in some cases, get cheaper at certain positions as guys get up there in years. But I think Joe Thomas, to me, he's the guy that you've got to build around the same way that if you go get a franchise quarterback at number 2 this year, he's in Sharpie for the next 4 years. Because you give him that football immediately, as you said yesterday, and you go put pieces around him, okay, led by Hugh Jackson, should be enough to win and win consistently in the NFL.
No question about it. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, more of your calls and your tweets, 216-578-0850. Tweet at the show at Browns_daily. It's Gibbs and Wilhelm on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Cleveland Browns Daily, a reminder, just a few minutes. We'll go over some of those position rankings that we didn't get to yesterday from Mike Mayock. Friday forecast comes your way at about 2:30. On Twitter, Bob in Millersburg, have the Teamsters Union boycotted CBD yet because of Wilhelm's driving comments yesterday?
What?
I didn't think you said anything horrible.
I didn't.
Thank you.
No, nothing that has never been said before around here. You know,
I said nothing against
your winter driving tips.
I said nothing against truckers. I said and I spoke of myself when I talked about being nervous next to a semi truck when I get the splash.
That's and then that guy called slush. That trucker called and he was angry.
Anthony out. Tough guy. Awesome. What I mean? Okay, whatever. You guys win. I lose. Awesome. Perfect.
Yeah.
Roll on.
On Twitter, Aaron tweets at the show, you've got to think he was offering coaching immortality. If you turn the Browns into winners, it's a Hall of Fame-level accomplishment. Since 99, I would tend to agree with you. We've had one winning season? Is that right,
Two.
Dino?
Two. Two winning seasons, one Two. Playoff appearance.
That's right. And we literally backed into that playoff appearance because eight things happened for us to – I remember being in an airport in Chicago.
Yes, because I remember you calling me.
Yeah. Custom Vinyl Lush tweets at the show. Thoughts on Nate Orchard? Thought he was playing his best football at the end of the season. Does he step up this year?
I think he definitely steps up this year. I think he's learned a lot. And I
believe there'll actually be a scheme.
There'll actually be a scheme that will feature him and in different positions and move him around. And I believe, as I've said before, as you focus on quarterback, the one other position that I like to see besides quarterback wide receiver is outside linebacker, another pass rusher. So if you've got, again, if Nate Gorcher's not there yet, but if he's penned in as one of your outside linebacking starters, go get me another young guy that can start across from him and have double-digit sacks out of each of those guys. You know, the good defenses in the league have 8-plus sacks coming out of their outside linebackers in a 3-4 defense.
Yeah, I love the way Nate Orchard played at the end of last year. I think it took him a little while to get going and figure things out, the speed of play. And
I think he had to earn some of the trust of the coaches, maybe with some rookie mistakes early in some of his reps.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's a guy that clearly the more reps he got, the better he got.
Yeah.
And the more confidence he got.
And I urge, and I want to, and I'll double check it, but I believe that Bucky Brooks from NFL Network wrote an article talking, it was like the three things the Broncos did to defeat the Carolina Panthers. And I urge any Browns fan to read that article. And this is not so much, you know, my love of Wade Phillips because of the person that he is and the coach that he was, but it's what Wade did with the Broncos and how he used DeMarcus and Von Miller and Danny Trevathan and the strengths of that defense. But just looking at some of the verbiage that Nathan and I constantly, you know, I would throw out there about the defenses that I played in that I did not see coming across in what a Jim O'Neill-led defense was doing. And it was, you know, gap integrity and lining up in your gap and winning your gap and winning your one-on-one and all that reading stuff that we did with O'Neill. That Bucky Brooks article highlights all the things that Wade and that defense did in the Super Bowl and leading up to the Super Bowl and executing the way they did. And it was all about your assignment, your gap. It was definitive, giving guys a role. And I think as this defense, and it very well could, get younger as time goes by with, you know, signing those free agents that you talked about that sure. are just butting into players, not overpaying them, drafting young players on the defense, give them – there's nothing more clear – then lining Danny Shelton up in a gap and saying, this is your gap, be that immovable object in this A gap. Nothing else. Okay? Don't swim him. Don't do that. Stay in your gap at all costs. Okay? And define it for him. And I promise you, that's very easy for Danny to do and for him to understand and play that role.
I'm very interested to see how Ray Horton uses Danny Shelton.
Me too.
Because Phil Taylor showed some signs under Ray Horton.
Yeah.
And there's that big guy that can clog up the middle. How
Casey
are you
Hampton
use
in
him?
Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I mean I'm very interested to see because I mean Danny Shelton said it himself. There were times he just didn't feel like he was getting enough coaching.
No,
and he didn't know where he was supposed to be, and he had questions about. You
Danny,
know.
Hit me up. I can help you. And I never played D-line in my career.
There you go, Matt Wilhelm offering up Danny Shelton advice.
That's easy. God.
We'll just come in here. We'll do a little whiteboard session in
show,
the CBS.
Yeah,
studios.
Right. It just goes to show how bad the defensive scheme and the coaches were last year. Taking things for granted, just reading on the run. But
yeah.
Now we gotta go to break.
All right. Dino screwing up a perfectly good Matt Wilhelm rant.
Yeah, I'm
216.
Sorry. It's time to break.
5-7.
Gotta pay the bills.
I think after the break, we should do our best to get Zagura on the phone.
I would agree. We can do that.
Let's interrupt the golf game because we're not golfing, so he shouldn't be allowed to golf either. It's Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.